Boulder Saturday Evening Program, June 8th, 2013.
Om Magyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vilitam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I'm going to begin tonight by reading to you from a very rare and wonderful book called the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And this book was written by Srila Sanatan Goswami 500 years ago, approximately. Sanatan Goswami was a contemporary of Lord Chaitanya, who is the most recent incarnation of Krishna in this world, who came to teach how everyone in this present age of Kali Yuga could attain spiritual success. And he empowered his disciples to codify everything that he taught so that it could be passed down to people all over the world. And in this book, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Srila Sanatan Goswami gives the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavatam. You know that the Bhagavatam was spoken in very unusual circumstances because there was an emperor named Parikshit who ruled the world. And Parikshit had been out on a riding expedition on his horse, and he became thirsty, which was uncharacteristic because he was also a very accomplished yogi who didn't succumb to any of the bodily demands. But by the Lord's arrangement, that day he became very thirsty and he went to look for water. And out in the forest there were only hermitages, and there was a hermitage of Shamika Rishi. He entered the hermitage in order to ask for a glass of water, and the sage was in meditation. And didn't respond to the emperor. So the emperor, also uncharacteristically, became angry. This is a test. Concentrate here, not there. Can we go without? Thank you. Uncharacteristically, he became angry. Anger is a result of frustration, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, Dhyayato vishayan pumsam sangas teshu bijayate sangat sangate kama, kamat krodha bijayate. Krodha, or anger, it arises after one contemplates the object of the senses and then is frustrated because there's no satisfaction, and then becomes angry. This is normally a material sentiment. And the king was overcome with anger, so he impulsively picked up a dead snake that was nearby where the rishi was meditating. And with his bow, he hung it around the neck of the snake, of the sage. And the sage had a son who was just a young boy, and he was playing with his friends nearby, and there was news that the emperor had gone into the forest, had entered the hermitage, and had hung a dead snake around the neck of his father. And the boy's name was Sringi, and he was very puffed up with his birth. In other words, his father was a brahmana, and at that time the brahmanas, the priestly caste, were very powerful and very well respected. And Sringi, thinking that his father had been dishonored, although his father actually didn't mind at all, uttered a curse against the king. And he said, "May the king die in 7 days by the bite of a snake bird." He conjured this idea that a snake and a bird would join together in one entity and then would fly in and would bite the king, and it would kill him in 7 days. Within 7 days, this would happen. And so, because the boy was from a Brahmin family, he had some power, and that curse had an effect. And Parikshit Maharaj was not pleased with himself that he had become angry. And then when he heard the curse, although he could have counteracted it, he didn't try to. He accepted it, and he said, this is God's arrangement. And this is one of the symptoms of a highly elevated person, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that is that when bad things happen, the enlightened person takes it as a blessing. In the case of Parikshit Maharaj, he said, I was so attached to all my power and material things that it took this act of God to make me give it up and become very serious about spiritual life. This is one of his qualities, which I've mentioned, called shanta, which means that he's forgiving. A saintly person or a person who's experiencing love for God is forgiving of others or other offenses that may be perpetrated upon him or her. So Parikshit said, let the snake bird bite me. I don't mind. Whatever comes by the will of the Supreme, that's fine. I'm taking it as his mercy. I simply want to go on hearing and chanting about God, about Krishna. Now the king left his palace and he went down to the Ganges, the sacred river, where sages would go to meditate and to take ritual baths. And with a great determination, he sat there to discern what was the proper consciousness to be in, what was the proper activity to perform in his last 7 days to become ready for death. This is big news when the emperor gives up the kingdom, because people were very much dependent on the emperor and they respected him very deeply. They worshipped him, in fact, because he was a saintly person. And now suddenly the people hear that there's this curse, the king has given up his kingdom, he's down at the bank of the Ganges. That's big news. You compare, maybe one day we hear on CNN that President Obama has come out of the White House sitting down at the Potomac River. And he wants to know the great truth of life and what to do at the time of death, and maybe he's cursed to die in 7 days. That would be big news, I think, around the world. Helicopters would be flying over with cameras and everything like that to see what's he going to say. That was the scene with Parikshit Maharaj, and thousands of people came to watch what's going to happen. And many people came to give him advice. Just like when you get a cold, everyone will come up to you, oh, I know what to do. My mom used to take linseed oil, and that'll cure it in 5 minutes. No problem. Everyone had some advice for Parikshit Maharaj. But it was discordant, it wasn't perfect, but finally, in the midst of all this discord, a great saint, 16 years old, Shukadeva Goswami, arrived. And he was obviously advanced and he was self-effulgent, wearing no clothes. It's a story about Shukadeva Goswami, how he was a self-realized soul even while he was in the womb of his mother. In fact, he wanted nothing to do with the material world, therefore he refused to come out of the womb for 16 years. Even Krishna finally had to come and say, you can come out, you won't fall victim to the material energy. But when Shukadeva Goswami came out of the womb, even though he was the son of Srila Vyasadeva, he ran away from home. He didn't want anything to do with the family, he went to the forest. But he was attracted back when he heard the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he came to study the Bhagavatam, proving that the Bhagavatam is transcendental and attractive even to those who are in the liberated stage of life. So this great sage, Shukadeva Goswami, he had not only renounced the world, but he was fixed in knowledge of the spiritual world. And this is important because there are many philosophies which are aimed at finding the perfection of life, and many of them give a partial understanding, incomplete knowledge of the complete whole. The complete whole encompasses everything. As Sri Upanishad says, Om Purnam Madah Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnameva Vishishyate. The personality of God, it is perfect and complete because he is completely perfect. Even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. You can just see in this material creation how the seed contains another tree. A miracle in a seed. You can propagate an orchard from one seed. It grows up, produces many more seeds. Miracles abound everywhere we look. This is a design of the complete and perfect intelligence of the personality of Godhead. And the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Vedanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj gyanam advayam prameti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. It is said by learned transcendentalists that there are three aspects of the Supreme Absolute Truth, of Advaya Gyan Tattva. There's only one. There's only one. Everything is God. True. But there are various features, aspects to God. There's his impersonal feature, the energy of God. Just like there's the sun and there's the rays that come from the sun. They're one, but at the same time different. And that impersonal feature of God is his all-pervasive energies. And then there's a localized aspect of God through which he enters within every atom, as mentioned in the Brahma Sanghita by Sri Brahma at the beginning of creation, Andantarasta Paramanu Chayantarastam. Krishna is there in his completeness in every atom. Consider that for a moment. God's within every atom. He's also all-pervading. And he's there in his complete form within every atom. So we're never separated from Krishna, only by our own consciousness. And then there's Bhagavan, who is the personal aspect of God in which, from whom all other energies and all other aspects of the Lord emanate. Brahmano hi pratishta aham, amritas yavayasya cha, shashvatasya cha dharmasya, sukasya ikantikasya cha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that all the other aspects, like the impersonal feature of God, emanate from the personality of God. This is confidential, rare knowledge. Because most people, in their quest for spiritual knowledge, simply rule out the material world. You can do this. You can say, the material world is temporary and miserable, therefore we'll say that whatever is spiritual means whatever is not material. This is a philosophy known as neti neti. I'll rule out everything. And when it's all done, I'm ruling out everything, then I'll arrive at the Supreme Brahman, God. But this kind of intellectual exercise only takes us so far. It takes us to an impersonal conception of God. We can't understand the personality of God unless he reveals it to us himself. And so some philosophies... Well, let's say the material philosophy, the philosophy of working hard in the material world called the life of adjustment means we try to adjust our situation here so that we can find some happiness. This is compared to carrying a heavy box on your shoulder and you get tired of it, so then you switch it to the other shoulder and you think, oh, relief, now I'm happy. But after about another half a mile, you think, no, this is still very heavy. Let me change it to my head. And you put the box on your head. In this way, material existence means I'm constantly shifting the burden from one shoulder to the next, still experiencing the same misery. And material life also, if we look at a number line, we'll see there's negative numbers, and then there's zero, and then there's positive numbers beyond that. Material life, well, there are integers, no doubt. We have variety, form, we have activity. This is called karma or vikarma. But they are negative numbers, just like spending on a credit card. You think I've got a lot of money, I'm doing pretty well, spending on credit. The United States has been doing it for years now. We're really affluent. But then where do you see the bill with interest? You still have to pay it off. This is karma. Whatever kind of enjoyment, adjustment I make in the material world, it looks like I'm getting a bigger number, but it has a negative sign next to it. You're going wrong way. Turn around. So some people, they turn around and they say, okay, let's negate material life. It's negative. It entangles me more and more, and there's suffering in the material world, no doubt. So the philosophers then come to negate material life, and they come all the way to zero. But zero is zero after all. You do have relief from the negative numbers, the negative experience of material life, but how long can you stay there? The Shastra says, actually, we're sentient beings. We're not dead stones. We desire ananda, or happiness, pleasure. And therefore, we have to have the positive numbers. And this is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam that Shukadeva Goswami heard after he had renounced the world, come all the way to zero. But then he heard, Aho Bhakiyam Stanakala Kutam, famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Uddhava says, who could take shelter of anyone else except for Krishna? After hearing that Krishna had liberated Putana, the great demoness, who appeared to kill him with poison smeared on her breasts. When he was just a baby, Krishna was with Nanda and Yashoda, and Kamsa was sending demons into Vraj to try to kill him. And Putana was employed by Kamsa. She put poison on her breasts, and she disguised herself as a very beautiful woman, so they just let her in, because it was a village. Everyone got to hold the baby. Come on in. And she picked up the baby intending to kill him, and then Krishna killed her by sucking out her life air. But afterwards, the Shastra says that she attained a supreme destination as one of the mothers of Krishna in the spiritual world. And therefore, Uddhava is saying, who could take shelter of anyone else but Krishna? Because he takes, even if it's tiny, your best qualification, and he overlooked the other fact that she was trying to kill me. Ah, no big deal. At least she acted like my mother. These narrations of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which describe Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are the positive numbers. And this attracted Shukadeva Goswami, the liberated soul, who is then moving in the world for one purpose, to give mercy to others. And this is the nature of spiritually fulfilled people. They have no other agenda in the world except to give to others. This Mahatmanas Tumam Partha Daivim Prakritim Ashrita Bhajantyananya Manaso Gyatva Bhutatim Avyayam. Krishna says that these souls are called Mahatmas. Mahatmas, they're great souls. Their hearts are as big as the sky because they have no more vested interest in the material world. As soon as I have a vested interest in the material world, I have to hold back my mercy because I'm afraid that someone will get ahead of me, or I'm afraid I'll lose what I have. But when someone becomes self-realized, they realize I don't have anything anyway. The only thing I have is my free will. My free will, which I can utilize to surrender to Krishna. And in that comes an unlimited life. A life where there's movement not for paying off the debt of material life. People drive down the freeway at a furious speed nowadays near our house, the 101 freeway. Why? It's a real question. I always wondered this when I was a kid. I'd look out and I'd see everyone driving around furious rate and think, why is it, where's everyone going? Doesn't matter, you go faster, it's still doing the same thing. Why? Driving at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Monday morning in a traffic jam, why? Indebted, have to pay off the debt, right? So there's another kind of movement in the spiritual world described in the Brahma Samhita, Sreya Kanta Kanta Parama Purusha Kalpa Taravo Druma Bhumish Chintamani Ghanamayi Toyam Amritam Kataganam Natyam Gamanam Api Vamshi Priyasaki Chidanandam Jyoti Paramapi Tadaswadyam Api Cha Sayatra Shiradhi Sravati Surabhibhyasya Sumahan Nimesardyakyo Vavrachatina Hiya Trapi Samayaha Vajay Shweta Dvipam Tamaham Iha Golokam Ityam Vidantaste Shanta Shitti Vilachara Katipaye. And that is that in the spiritual world, people travel, but they're pleasure trips only. They're airplanes, but people don't carry briefcases. In fact, they're flower airplanes, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. People are going for pleasure trips only. Krishna plays the flute. And Prabhupada once said, Krishna plays the flute means Krishna's all play and no work. That's the spiritual world, all play and no work. This is Leela. There's no reason to work because there's no debt. There's no karma. You're in the positive numbers. So people are dancing. Every word is a song. Why do people sing? Why do you sing in the shower? Why? Because you're happy. Why else sing? Because you're happy. It's an expression of happiness. And why dance? What is dance for? It's an expression. It's a movement. It's a movement of happiness. This is what goes on in the spiritual world. If you study what the universities teach in the spiritual world, that's there in the Brahma Samhita. You can go to university in the spiritual world. It's all about how to make flower garlands, how to make music. It's all the arts. All these beautiful arts that our people are engaged in with full imagination. Textiles, I'm sure you'll get. For the aesthetic sense, to increase the happiness and the exchange of love between Krishna and his devotees. So getting back to the story, Shukadeva Goswami, the liberated soul, walking only for the purpose of giving mercy to others, self-effulgent. That is, when everyone saw him, they didn't have to interview him. They noticed this is an enlightened soul. He was self-effulgent. They all stood up out of respect, all the sages. And there were great sages there. But they saw, here's Shukadeva Goswami. He's got no vested interest in the material world. He's not even wearing clothes. He didn't have to pick anything out. And he sat down in the seat of esteem and began to speak to Parikshit Maharaj, who asked him this question: what is the duty of a person about to die? Now, wouldn't you want to hear that conversation? And all the sages wanted to hear it. They moved in close. They were all listening. For 7 days and seven nights, they didn't stop speaking. Parikshit kept asking questions, and Shukadeva kept answering the questions. They didn't drink water. They didn't have time. He only had 7 days to live. How many days do we have to live? 7 days. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You've got one of those days we'll get the call and we'll have to leave. It could be suddenly, or we could have a little bit of lead time, but we will get that call. We're in the same position. Therefore, it's relevant to everybody. Everyone who realizes that they're in a precarious situation, that they may leave at any moment this situation, which I think is safe but is not. It's Kamala Dala Jala Jivanatala Mala. In Bengali, Jayadev Goswami says, just like sometimes on a lotus leaf, which is very waxy, it doesn't absorb water at all, there may be a drop of water that's sitting, and at any moment it can roll off. So our lives are like that. They're tenuous. At any moment we can just roll out of this body and on to the next destination. Where to? Human life's an opportunity to direct our own destiny. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yanti deva vrta devam pitrin yanti patir vrta, bhutani yanti bhuteja, yanti mam yajinopima. Means you can go where you like. It's up to you now. You're in the human form of life. You're directing your own destiny now. Big responsibility, isn't it? To decide where you're going to go. Krishna is not a religious fanatic. He gives us complete freedom. Bhagavad Gita is not a book of religious fanaticism. Krishna's just telling, here's the situation, now you make your own choice. Do as you wish. You can go wherever you want. That's what he says. So wouldn't we want to hear the conversation? How to transport oneself from this tenuous, temporary, miserable situation to the spiritual world? And that's just what they talked about, and that's what's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses of it, describing how to achieve the perfection of life, convincing us from every different angle of vision. Now, to come to the point. Shall I? Okay, so there were 7 days, seven nights. Parikshit's mother was there, but she wasn't close enough to hear. They didn't have it mic'd up. And after the 7 days of speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam by Shukadeva Goswami, and the assembly of sages was breaking up, Uttara, the mother of Parikshit, came close to her son, knowing that he was about to die. There was still an interim of time before he would leave. And she said, please tell me. You have to tell me what was the essence of what was spoken to you. And in that short period of time that he had after hearing from Shukadeva Goswami and before leaving his body, he had the opportunity to encapsulate what he had heard from Shukadeva Goswami. That's the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam is already the essential nectar of the Vedas. You take all the Vedas, it's a vast project. It addresses every single aspect of life. Most of it has to do with material life and the three modes of material nature. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunya Vavarjuna Nirdvanvo Nitya Satvasto Nir Yoga Shema Atmavan. Most of the Vedas deal with how to adjust oneself in the material nature. And he says, rise above this. Then there are the Upanishads, which describe that we're not part of this world. And then comes the descriptions in the Mahabharata and the Puranas, which give us the detailed information of our eternal nature as servants of Krishna. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam, Shukamukadam Rita Drava Samyutam, Pipata Bhagavatam Rasamalam, Mahuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka. It's from the tree of the Vedas, the fruit that comes out is the Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's not just that. It's also the fruit has been blended and turned it into a smoothie. It's semi-solid. You don't even have to chew it. This is the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's already pre-digested by Shukadeva Goswami. In other words, you can just drink the nectar. This is the idea. And when you drink it, you'll pass out and fall on the ground out of ecstasy. And then what do? You get back up and drink some more. That was Lord Chaitanya's preoccupation. Experiencing this ecstasy. It comes out of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's there. Now what happens if you take that essential nectar and then you essentialize it more? You get the Sri Brihat Bhagavatamrita. That's what's in that book. We have that book. That's an amazing fact. We have that book. And in this Brihat Bhagavatamrita, one of the direct associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking about the story of Gopakumar and how he went back to Godhead. Gopakumar tells his own story, actually. And he says that the best way to learn about spiritual life is to hear about one's personal story. Although devotees don't like to talk about themselves, he said this is for the sake of instruction. So he told his story to his disciple of how he went throughout the whole material world and how he eventually went back home, back to Godhead. That's the topic of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. So I'll read a part of that, unless we're out of time already. This is an introduction verse or a Mangalacharna verse where Sanatan Goswami is invoking auspiciousness before he tells the story. All glories to Lord Murari in the form of his all ecstatic name. If any living being puts aside such tasks as meditation, ritual worship, and social duties, and even once takes the Lord's holy name, the name will grant him liberation. That holy name is the greatest source of eternal pleasure and is my very life and ornament. Purport. And now, these purports were written in Sanskrit by Sanatan Goswami and translated by Gopi Puranadana Peru, who is eminently qualified to do that work. Among the various practices of devotional service, the most important is chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Chanting the Lord's name is Ananda Rupam, pure bliss, because it makes ecstasy rise in the heart. Chanting the holy names is also ananda rupam in the sense that it is the essence of ecstasy and it makes everything it touches ecstatic. Right? Today we were just chanting down on the plaza and I saw a group of people walking by and one of the women was going like dancing to the sound and sort of, she didn't know she was sort of imitating in a way, but she was feeling some ecstasy from the name as she was going by. Everything the name touches becomes ecstatic. In this verse, the author again repeats the exclamation, Jayati, indicating that Harinam, the name of the Lord, is the greatest manifestation of the Supreme Lord's attractiveness and mercy. One who realizes the value of Harinam will choose to rely on chanting Harinam rather than on other kinds of spiritual effort. Performing prescribed duties within the Varnashram system is troublesome. Persons who have lost interest in the ritual duties of Varnashram cultivate yogic meditation, either for impersonal perfection or as a means of devotional service. But in either case, this too is troublesome because it involves the difficulty of subduing the mind and senses. Worship of the deity of the Lord is troublesome because the worshiper must purify all the items to be offered, and his own body and heart as well. And also troublesome are the other devotional practices, such as hearing, which can be correctly performed only after one fulfills difficult prerequisites, such as finding a suitably qualified Vaishnava to hear from. Therefore, putting aside concern about success in these methods, an intelligent devotee will simply focus his attention on Harinam, and thus he will easily achieve the results of all the above methods. Devahuti, the mother of Lord Kapiladev, confirms this in a prayer to her son. Aho batashwa pachato gariyan yad jiva gre vartate namatubhyam. Tapus tapaste jahuvur sasnur arya brahmana churnama granantiyete. Oh, how glorious are those whose tongues are chanting your holy name. Even if born in the families of dog eaters, such persons are worshipable. Persons who chant the holy name of your lordship must have executed all kinds of austerities and fire sacrifices and achieved all the good manners of the Aryans. To be chanting the holy name of your lordship, they must have bathed at holy places of pilgrimage, studied the Vedas, and fulfilled everything required. Unquote. Similarly, in the Sri Vishnu Purana, we find the following statement. Yayan krite yajan yajnais tretayan dvaparir chayan. Yat apnoti tarapnoti kalo sankirtya keshavam. What was accomplished in the Krita age by meditation, that's Satyayuga, in the Treta age by ritual sacrifice, and in the Dwapara age by worship of the deity of the Lord, is accomplished in this age of Kali by the loud chanting of the names of Hare Krishna, Keshava. A doubting person may question the ease of success by Harinam. Quote, one might earn religious credit, economic success, and material enjoyment by Harinam, he might say, but liberation is something else. Liberation can be gained only by those who are spiritually fit. At best, devotees who chant Harinam with perfect faith and devotion may achieve liberation through long practice. Srila Sanatana Goswami refutes this doubt, declaring here that if any living being even once chants Lord Hari's name, even unintentionally, or in ridicule, jest, or material distress, the holy name will surely grace that person with liberation. This chanting may be performed without true realization. It may be a mere reflection or shadow, namabhas, but still it will result in liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam confirms this again. Quote, one is easily relieved from all sinful reactions by chanting the holy name of the Lord and chanting of his qualities and activities. This is the only process recommended for relief from sinful reactions. Even if one chants the holy name of the Lord with improper pronunciation, one will achieve relief from the material bondage if one chants without offenses. Ajamil, for example, was extremely sinful, but while dying, he merely chanted the holy name, and although calling his son, he achieved complete liberation because he remembered the name of Narayan. It is amazing, says the Bhagavatam, that even a person beyond the jurisdiction of the four castes, in other words, an untouchable, is immediately relieved of bondage to material existence if he utters the holy name of the Lord even once. Merely by hearing the holy name of your lordship only once, even chandalas, men of the lowest class, are freed from all material contamination. The Prabhaskanda of the Skanda Purana also says, O best of the Bhrigu dynasty, the holy name of Krishna is the sweetest of the sweet and the most auspicious of the auspicious. It is the transcendental fruit of all the Vedas and is purely spiritual. Whoever chants it but once, whether with faith or with contempt, is liberated. Although we normally think of chanting as being the business of the tongue, all of one's conscious faculties can be engaged with Harinam. The mind can contemplate the syllables of the Lord's names and their meanings, and the external senses can interact with Harinam in their own ways. Speech and hearing are obviously involved in Harinam, but the sense of touch can also feel the name written in sacred clay on one's body. The eyes can see the name written in various places. The hands and legs can work to carry a banner inscribed with the name on it, etc. We saw that today. At the end of this verse, Srila Sanatan describes his own relationship with Harinam. It is everything to him. Nothing else is important. For him, Harinam is the nectar of immortality, the happiness of true liberation. Countless times greater than the satisfaction of impersonal mukti, Harinam is also greater than the bliss of Vaikuntha. It is sweeter than all other attractive things. It is Sanatana Goswami's very life and ornament, a limitless reservoir of auspiciousness, the entire focus of his attention. Om Tat Sat. Now we'll take reflections or questions. Bhakti Noah. There are different circumstances under which, when the name is chanted, it has a varying degree of effects. Just like when a spark lands on a bog, it will take a little while but to conflagrate. But when it lands on dry grass, it will burn immediately. So depending on the quality of the chanting, if one chants without offense, then the name acts in such a way as to purify the person. And as we see in the case of Ajamil, he was liberated, but still, after he had met with the Yamadutas and was saved by the Vishnudutas, he still had to take time to completely purify himself to go back home, back to Godhead. And in the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Prabhupada mentions that if one once performs devotional service, including chanting the holy name, even unintentionally, there's a way in which the process of him going back to Godhead is practically assured. In other words, he says that person will be dragged back home, back to Godhead. Yes?
In the purport you were reading, you were talking about how hearing and every other activity, the qualification, even if there's no proper qualification, chanting creates proper qualification. That the right understanding, like just by doing chanting, we get the qualification for proper hearing.
Your question is, by chanting, we get qualification for hearing?
Because it was mentioned when you're reading, sometimes we might not be qualified to hear, we might not get the opportunity to perfectly hear, but the Harinam itself is not dependent on any other circumstances.
Yes, in the Namashtakam by Rupa Goswami, he writes that Yadabaso Pyudyang Kavalita Bhava Dvanta Vibhavo Drisham Tatvandanam Api Dishati Bhakti Pranayanim. And that is that even with the dim glimmer, that is the rays of the holy name, Namabas, if somebody hears the holy name unintentionally, just like they're walking by, they hear it, he says that even one is tattvanandhanam. Tattvanandhana means blind to the truth, has no idea about devotional service at all, and any of the processes of devotional service, has no intention. But by hearing the name, yadabaso pyutyan kavalita bhavadvanta vibhavo, the great darkness of the material world is swallowed up by the power of the holy name, by the namabhas. And then drisham tattva andanam, even a person who's completely blind, they begin to see, drisham tattva andanam, drishati bhakti pranayanim, and they start to understand what is bhakti. They get an inkling of what is bhakti and whatever the processes of devotional service, they become attracted to it. So the holy name is has entered the material universe, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, to bless all souls. It's the incarnation of Krishna in the age of Kali Yuga. And he's sort of aggressive, the holy name. He goes everywhere in the world. People hear the name, and doesn't matter what culture they're from, they'll begin to gradually understand what is bhakti, and they'll begin to practice it and have qualification for it. So that kind of contact with the holy name, even incidentally, creates this agata sukriti. And from when that agata sukriti ripens, then the person's shraddha or faith in the process of devotional service awakens, and then they seek out association of devotees. Is it possible for a living entity to do activities of consciousness to eradicate sukriti? No, not possible. It is possible to delay the effect of the sukriti. Confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Neha bikramanasho si pratyavayo navidite swalpamapya siddharmasya trayate mahato bhayat, that when one performs some tiny act of devotional service, that's indelible, and it's never lost. And he confirms it also in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how when one begins one's devotional practice, even if somehow or other, by acts of consciousness, he becomes diverted from the practice, he again is reminded of it, and he takes it up. And in the case of offenses, it can diminish one's ability to practice devotional service so much that one may give up the process. But after one has suffered the results, the reactions that come from that offense, he again comes back to where he was before in practice, and that sukriti will act again. Yes? Yes. Yeah. The Taraka Brahmanam, mentioned in the Kali Santaran Upanishad, this mantra, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, is for deliverance. But because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself and appeared in this particular Kali Yuga, he wrapped that holy name with a wreath of prema. And therefore it has a very... When one's receiving this vibration of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra coming through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's something very special about it, and that is that one can attain the highest perfection of life, prema. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is mentioned as coming to give away the highest wealth of spiritual life. In fact, we read further along the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, he's so kind that he gives it to people who aren't even worthy or don't even ask for it. In fact, one of the acharyas has explained how the emperor, he becomes intoxicated and goes into the treasury house and takes out all the jewels, the most valuable jewels in the treasury, puts them in a bag, and then singing in intoxication goes to the common road and begins to give them out to the passers-by indiscriminately. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anarpita charim shirat karani yavatirna kalau samarpayitu munuto jwala rasam subhakti shriyam. That Krishna had considered for a long time, I haven't given out this most precious jewel of Ujjvala Ras, or the conception of this intimate relationship with Krishna and his devotees. No one knows about this. In fact, this was another point that Uttara brought up to her son Parikshit. She said, there's a kind of devotion that is beyond the official worship of God as the Supreme Person. And she said, she intuited then that there must be a place, a special place where that pure devotion, that kind of very rare devotion is enacted. And she wanted to know, where is that place? And that's what prompted Parikshit Maharaj to describe the sojourn of Gopakumar, who goes back to Goloka Vrindavan, where this kind of devotion is practiced, where no one has any idea about God. They don't really care about God so much. They only love Krishna. There's only this intense love for God. In fact, in the description of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumar enters Goloka Vrindavan, and by the way, how he entered Goloka Vrindavan was by the instruction of his guru. He went to Gokula Vrindavan, which is the exact replica of Goloka Vrindavan on this earthly planet. And he performed Sankirtan, the loud chanting of the Lord's names. And from that performance of Sankirtan in Vraj, he was able to go back to the Goloka Vrindavan. And by the mercy of his guru and the mantra that he chanted. When he entered Goloka Vrindavan, he noticed that it looked exactly like Gokula Vrindavan. He couldn't tell the difference between earthly Vrindavan and Goloka Vrindavan. And at first, upon entering Goloka Vrindavan, he began to ask, where is the palace of Nanda Maharaj? Because he wanted to meet Nanda Nandana, the son of Nanda Maharaj. He wanted to meet Krishna. So he said, where does Nanda Maharaj live? Please tell me where his house is. I want to go there and meet Krishna. And the first couple that he met were elderly couple, and they simply stared at him and didn't answer. And he thought, maybe I'm not speaking the right language, or maybe these people are a little bit rough or a little rude somehow, that they're not talking to me. I'm an outsider. What's going on? And as he went further, he met some more residents who were singing, and they gave him the direction to the place where Krishna lived. And Sanatana Goswami reveals that this first couple was not speaking out of ecstasy, because it was the daytime. And when Krishna goes away in the morning to the forest, the residents of Vrindavan are so stunned in ecstasy that they can barely move or talk or do anything else in separation from Krishna. So when Gopakumar enters the city, the town of Vraj, near Nanda Maharaj's palace, he notices that everything has stopped and is quiet. And people are walking around as if they were mad, in fact. And then he sees a black cloud of dust coming from the forest. And when all the people of the village see that, the life comes back again. They see the blackness of the dust coming from the hooves of the calves that Krishna is herding in the forest. And this darkness is actually the cause of their great jubilation, because they know now Krishna is coming back from the forest into the town. So they all begin to run forward. And Gopakumar is just positioned in such a way that he can see Krishna coming out of the clearing of the forest. And he sees Krishna, and Krishna sees him, and Krishna runs forward to embrace Gopakumar. And out of ecstasy, Krishna faints on the ground, and described how he's crying tears of ecstasy, being reunited with his devotee who's come back to Godhead. So much so that the ground around him is muddy by his tears. And then all the friends of Krishna, who then catch up, are seeing that Krishna is lying on the ground unconscious. And they begin to speculate that this person, Gopal Kumar, is some kind of outsider. Actually, at this point, his name is, it's Gopal Kumar. So they're thinking maybe he's an outsider sent by Kamsa, who was the archenemy of Krishna, and wanted to kill him. And all the people in the village, seeing this scene, they began to cry and wail. Even in the birds in the sky, they were making these human-like sounds of crying. And practically, again, out of this intense separation from Krishna, everything stopped. And then Balaram, who's most intelligent, he pervaded the situation. He said, oh, I understand what's going on. So he took the hand of Gopal Kumar, and with it he cleansed the body, the dust from the body of Krishna. And then, as Krishna came back to consciousness, he took the hand of Gopal Kumar and said, we'll never be separated again. And he told him his name is Sarup, his eternal name in the spiritual world. And then they go off to Krishna's home. And Krishna keeps Gopal Kumar with him wherever he goes. Actually, every living entity, sanitya nitya sambandha prakritischa paraivasa, every living entity has an eternal relationship with the Lord, and it has only been covered over. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhya kabunoi shravanadi shuddha chitti karu udoy. And that is, it's already there, present within the heart of every living entity. It only needs to be reawakened, and that's done by the process of shravanam kirtanam, or hearing transcendental sound, especially the chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Okay? Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru. Actually, I was reading in the Chaita Harinam Chintamani that when it comes to the section of offenses, where there's 10 offenses to chant the holy name, and said that if there's a disciple is committing Namaparadha deliberately, the spiritual master can give up the disciple. So actually in Prabhupada, I read the Prabhupada, I can't give up my disciples. He said that the spiritual master never rejects the disciple. So I kind of feel that. Is there something I'm missing, or is there a conflict and I'm not sure? So I guess, can you please clarify that?
Lord Rishabhadeva in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam says that a spiritual master has to tolerate over and over again the missteps of a disciple without becoming angry, and again, you know, give opportunities. There may be cases when a disciple breaks the pact with the spiritual master, and then there can be some separation, because that did happen in Prabhupada's time also, when someone rejected Prabhupada and said, and then Prabhupada was no longer obligated. So that can be the case. Yes?
One of the things that I wanted to ask, Rupa Swami has given us the three categories of devotees, Kanishtha, Madhya, and Uttama Adhikaris. And we have been instructed in the Bhakti Samrat Sindhu that we should help the devotees in the Kanishtha stage associate with devotees in the Madhyam stage and take instruction from devotees in the Uttam stage. But this is a judgment that is being made by you as a practicing devotee. And so in your mind, you're deciding, maybe this is the devotee I want to associate with, or this is the devotee I want to take instruction from, and maybe this is a devotee that is not at the stage that I should associate with, because a judgment has to be made by you, yes? Because although there's these three categories, obviously a spiritual master is always not there, a siksha guru is not there. So you are making this judgment on a daily basis, also amongst the devotee community, and judging, is this the devotee I want to associate with? Is this the devotee? Is that a nama? Is that one of the 10 offenses that you can be committing mentally by classifying devotees? I just want to make sure that out of the 10 offenses, one offense is obviously the blasphemy, the devotees are dedicated their lives for poverty. Are you mentally making that mistake and committing a nama prana?
No. In fact, Rupa Goswami instructs us to make these distinctions. In the fifth verse of the Nectar of Instruction, he says, Set Krishna Nama, I'm sorry, Krishneti yasa giritam manasa adriyeta dikshasti chet braniti bishta chabachantam isham shushushaya bhajanam vitnamananyamanya nindari shunya hridamipsita sangalabhya. That one should, he's giving that instruction to us, that there are three classes of devotees and we should distinguish between them. He says if someone says Hare Krishna, pursuant to the verses we just heard from the Bhagavatam where the Kapila Dev's mother, Devahuti, said how wonderful it is someone just says the holy name, even with the tip of their tongue, even a little bit, they're to be considered purified souls. They're elevated. So if someone says Hare Krishna, but they're not initiated or they haven't taken the path seriously, they're still to be given respect from within one's mind. And then if one is initiated, that is, they've taken the process seriously and taken initiation from a spiritual master and they're fixed in their chanting, then we should actually offer bodily obeisances to such a person. Then he says, out of all those who are initiated, if someone excels in the practice and becomes obviously steady and elevated and is also always thinking their only business is how to spread Krishna consciousness, then that person is considered an uttama adhikari. And then one should, and the other symptom of that person, as I mentioned this morning, I think in class, was that person is nindari shunya, hridam, the heart is free from the propensity to criticize others. And so he says that with that person we should associate. And then, and Prabhupada mentions in the last paragraph of that purport that we should learn to discriminate, not only what class we're in, but how to discern, how to associate with others. It's not a mysterious thing. There are verifiable symptoms. We go with verifiable symptoms, not with some idea about what is an uttamadhikari. Prabhupada has given verifiable symptoms. That is, if somebody's steady in their practice of devotional service, you can verify that, right? You can verify also if somebody is knows the shastra. Just ask them. And you can also verify if they're a teacher. They're teaching Krishna consciousness. These are qualifications. And also by associating with advanced devotees, you can also have a sense that they've given up the process of maliciously criticizing others. So we are meant to discriminate. In fact, the Madhyamadhikari is described as one who does discriminate. Ishvare taradineshu balisheshu dvisatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyama. A Madhyamadhikari is one who sees four entities. One is Krishna, and he offers his love to Krishna. The devotees, and he makes appropriate friendship with all the devotees. He sees the innocent, and then he gives as much mercy as possible to the innocent, as much as they can take. And for the envious, those who are against the whole idea of God and Krishna consciousness and so forth, he's upeksha, which means he's indifferent. He doesn't associate with them. So we have to discriminate as Madhyama Adhikaris to, in order to properly associate with the right kinds of people. And blasphemy of devotees is something different from that. There actually has to be some kind of malice. Criticizing devotees out of envy unnecessarily, this is an offense. Yes?
My question is a So it's very clear that criticism with malicious intent is extremely damaging all the way around. But how about this situation that happens all the time, where you may be in contact with a devotee who is serving sincerely, but they definitely do things that are hurting other people, or out of alignment with things that will help them progress. And they may be like, they might even be a guru, but they have a tendency to gossip, or they are still really stressed out, and when they get stressed out, they don't necessarily give their mercy freely, or whatever it is. So how do you, I understand that we must always, I get it about bowing down to a devotee all the time. At the same time, the heart may want what's best sincerely for everybody and still speak very strongly. And that might not be understood by the community, but I believe it's understood.
Can you form a question?
Yeah. My question is really, so the simple question is, what is the protocol for appropriately, humbly helping devotees who you can see are doing things that hurt other people?
You should do it appropriately and humbly. Yeah, it may vary according to circumstances, but you have to look for appropriate ways and humble ways to do that. So there may be a lot of details about that I don't want to maybe go into now, but there's always an appropriate way to deal with it. And I just say that people are complicated. And when you put a lot of people together, the complication becomes exponential. And this is what Queen Kunti said, that dissension amongst human beings is due to social intercourse, because naturally that's there. And in a spiritual society, we shouldn't expect utopia. Prabhupada said that when he wrote to one devotee who was complaining about leaders, you know, arguing amongst themselves in a spiritual society. How can this be spiritual? Shouldn't everybody be completely docile and peaceful and harmonious? Prabhupada said, this is a Mayavadi idea. It's an impersonal idea. He said, don't expect utopia even in the spiritual world, because we're persons and therefore we have differences of opinion and so forth, and there's going to be some kind of discord. So how to deal with that, I don't want to go into, you know, like details, but I would just say there's always an appropriate way to deal with it. And it may not be immediately apparent, but if we are humble in dealing with it, and we have the best interest of all the people involved in mind when we deal with it, then there will be a positive outcome. Positive outcome.
You're basically saying that Krishna will show you a way. You just have to kind of keep aware and be patient.
Yeah, that's a real, yeah, Krishna will help. Yes?
The struggle of criticizing others, even if it may be not external but internal, mental criticism, does that get purified? You know, does Krishna take that away? Or do we have to, because you mentioned free will, do we have to like,
50-50.
50-50, okay.
That's proved in the pastime of Damodar Leela, when Mother Yashoda was chasing after Krishna after he broke the butter pot. And she, for his own good, she wanted to restrain him. And she was trying to tie ropes around him to hold him to the grinding mortar. And every time she added more rope, it was how many inches too short? 2 inches. And then neighbors were actually throwing in rope, saying, here, take some more, take some more. And they were enjoying the fact that every time she tied it together and tried to tie up Krishna, 2 inches too short. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says these 2 inches indicate something very important. That 1 inch means our own endeavor. And the second inch means that Krishna, seeing our own endeavor, as was the case when Mother Yashoda was trying to tie up Krishna and she was perspiring, she was trying so hard, that Krishna says, okay, you can tie me up. Tied out of love for his devotees. So when we make the endeavor to purify ourselves, Krishna will help. Tesham satata yuktanam pajatam priti purvakam dadami buddha yogam tam yena mamupayantite. But God helps those who help themselves. And Prabhupada said, helping oneself means putting yourself in front of transcendental sound vibration. Make sure you're there for it. And you take advantage of every situation that you can. And then Krishna, Srinvatam swakata Krishna punya sharvana kirtana hrityantakstohi badrani vidhunoti suritsita satam. He helps to winnow out all the impurities from within the heart. He helps to remove them. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has compared all the anartas that one may have within one's heart to one of the demons in Vrindavan that Krishna kills. And they're an archetype of a certain kind of anarta. Like Putana is the archetype of the false guru, because she disguised herself as a mother and then she came and said, yeah, I'm just here to help, you know. But actually she had a dastardly idea behind her approach, and this represents the false guru. So there are all these different anartas, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, by hearing about Krishna's pastimes and by chanting Hare Krishna, then Krishna, who's all powerful in killing these anartas or killing the demons, can also kill these anartas. And there's a story about the two policemen in Delhi who were complaining that one of them was saying that, you know, it's Krishna is known as Makanchor. He's a butter thief. So he's known as a thief. He would go around to all the neighboring houses and he would steal butter because it tastes better when it's stolen. Even though Mother Yashoda said, we have plenty of butter in our house. Why do you go elsewhere to steal? Krishna likes stealing from his devotees and tasting that butter better. So one of the policemen was saying that it's a shame that, you know, we're trying to stop all these thieves breaking into people's houses and so forth, but, you know, the God we worship is known as a thief. How does that balance out? And the other one very intelligently said, actually, that's a good thing, because just as people, they put all these locks and high walls around their house in order to keep out thieves, we also, around our heart, we want to keep these anartas, so we put these high walls and locks. I'm not giving that one up. I'll give everything else up, but not that. But Krishna's so expert, he can actually come over the wall, come through, you know, break open the lock. But it's a lot more effective if one voluntarily leaves the door open. And we can do this consciously, you know, as we're performing our devotional service, we can pray, Krishna, do as you wish. That's a risky prayer, isn't it? I'm not strong enough to remove these anartas, but I'm giving you permission to either break in, or I'm leaving the door open, even better. You can come in and just take all those anartas away from me. Dare you say that, such a prayer? Does anyone dare? Krishna, I don't know what's good for me. You do whatever you like. That's a risky prayer. And Prabhupada said, there are these 4 regulative principles we follow. One of them is no gambling. But there's a replacement for each one of them. The replacement for gambling, mundane gambling and speculation and so forth, is surrender to Krishna. Just gamble it all away. Double down. Okay, now Krishna, here goes. You come in, take whatever you want, because I can't do it myself. Taking a big risk. But actually, there's no risk at all. Yasyaham mina grinnami harishe taddanam shanai. When Krishna shows his mercy, he forcefully takes away from the devotee all those attachments that actually are slowing down his process of devotional service. And sometimes it may appear as like a great loss, but then one realizes. You look at the life of Prabhupada, how he had a business. He had received an order from his spiritual master, preach Krishna consciousness in the Western world. And he said, I had this idea, I'd make a lot of money and then I'd have facility and I'd be able to do this. So he had this business plan, and it was making a lot of money, and the astrologer said, you're going to be as rich as Birla. Birla is one of the richest men in India. And then Prabhupada said it all fell apart. He said Krishna dismantled everything. And the devotees laughed a little bit because they only saw Prabhupada in his, you know, present form as a, you know, Paramahamsa. And they laughed, like, why would he care? And Prabhupada said, no, when Krishna takes away everything, you become morose. And then after Prabhupada took sannyas, he was gored by a cow with long horns, you know, swung the horns and hit him in the side and seriously injured him. And he was alone, just having taken sannyas. And he said, I was thinking, what is this? But then he was remarking how Krishna took away all these things, the money, the family. Then he came to America with no money, no means, no connections. And then he said, now look, how Krishna's given everything. He said, now I have more sons and daughters than I, you know, who are more loving, hundreds of times more loving than I had in my previous family and so forth. So Krishna's Hari, he actually takes away our miseries. So we should, if we dare, we should pray like that and take a risk. Then it's exciting, actually. Spiritual life is exciting. Otherwise, Niyamagraha means I keep holding on to the status quo. But if we're willing to open the lock and allow Krishna in, then we'll experience dynamic change. Right? You had your hand up?
See how much we donate or what service we are doing, how much we are holding back.
Yeah, Madhava Maharaj was just saying that a lot when he was out in California. He said he sees what's behind your back, not what you keep. What did you keep behind your back? He knows what's there. Mata, you've had...
Well, actually, this devotee here and I, we had a conversation earlier today about, about hard times and not having what we think we need. And well, so this again reminds me, losing everything we have. I mean, how can we develop faith in Krishna? How can we develop trust in Him taking care of us when we have everything we need and want? You know, it's only by not having those things that our faith becomes strong, that we know Krishna always takes care of me. And for me, it's priceless.
Yeah.
Having possessions, everything has a price. But knowing Krishna always takes care of me, regardless of how things look, that is priceless.
Mm.
And for me, that is when life becomes happy or blissful. You know, when I can relax and, okay, well, this doesn't look the way I want it to look, but like you said, it becomes fun. Hey, let's just see how Krishna works this one out, you know, what he has planned this time. Now then life is exciting. Yeah, not that I want to lose everything that I have again at this point, but really that's how it is.
Nice point. Really nice point. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in managing his many temples around India, used to keep his leaders in debt. Whenever they'd get a big donation, he'd tell them to spend it on a festival immediately and borrow more money because he wanted them to be in that... have that sense of anxiety all the time. Not that, okay, we've collected so much money, we're okay now. And now we can just cruise. But he kept them purposefully on the edge. We know just recently at our temple in Silicon Valley, we had no idea where we were going to get any money from. About how to build, you know, we found a place, it was $1.2 million to buy this new temple. And we didn't have that much money at all. And there was a lot of anxiety. I had a lot of sleepless nights. Especially after we bought it. Somehow or other we raised the money. It was a miracle to get the down payment. And then someone came back and said, now we need 300,000 more. It wasn't enough. Actually, there were some, you know, other calculations involved. And I thought, where are we going to get $300,000? And in that kind of intense anxiety, there was a lot of prayer going on. And there, you know, it came from miraculous places. just like miracle. And so Queen Kunti prays, Vipara santasasva tatra tatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yatsyada punar bhavadarshanam. She actually has a taste for this like you do, and she's saying, let calamities come again and again. Because when these calamities come, that's when I have your darshan. That's when I actually really pray deeply to Krishna, and I can experience something intense connection with him. Not when I'm full. So then she says, Janmaishvarya Shruta Shribira Idamana Madapuman Naivarhat Yavidatum Vai Twama Kinchana Gocharam. That if someone thinks I have something, like I have wealth, I have beauty, I have fame, I'm okay. You have a full tank of gas, you got money in the bank, refrigerator's full, life's good, right? What do I need God for? That's the typical thing. So he says you have to keep yourself a kinchan. Kinchan means something, and akinchan means I don't have anything. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings like this, Manasa deho geho yo kichu mor. I don't have anything. Nothing belongs to me. I'm completely dependent on you, Krishna. So we have to practice being in that state of kinchan. Even when we have facility, we have to cultivate that. Yes, Prabhu?
One of the other questions that I wanted you to elaborate on was on chanting. It's always mentioned that when you're chanting, you should chant maybe during the Brahma Muhurat time. Now, as a congregational devotee, householder, I have a system of waking up early and chanting my rounds. But when I'm chanting, even when you have that atmosphere of quietness and you're maybe doing it next to Tulsi, or you've created the atmosphere that at least you're able to hear what you're chanting, you're at least trying to hear your words, your mind still moves away. You know, sometimes you see you're chanting and all of a sudden your mind is thinking something else, but you're still hearing the words. Now, I was reading recently Japa Reform and by Saraswati Maharaj that he had written. What is your take if you're... Because also one of the 10 offenses is to be inattentive while chanting. So you are chanting, but you're hearing the name, but your mind still goes, you know, it's chanchal, so it keeps on flickering. What will be an antidote or a suggestion, or do you think you're doing the right thing, at least you're hearing, and automatically Krishna will help, like you say, 50-50, or you need to do something?
Just listen very carefully, and whenever the mind goes away, you bring it back.
How do you bring it back? You know, that's the question. How do you bring it back? Because
Krishna says to Arjuna, who asked the exact same question, by practice and by detachment. So you have to detach yourself from your mind and see that it's not you. It's going around and around the universe, going here and there, but you have to notice it. And if you're noticing it, then you're the noticer and it's another entity. And then you also have to practice. And he said by practicing this kind of meditation, that means when the mind is distracted, and it will be distracted, he says that the mind is very difficult to control. Chanchalam himana Krishna, Arjuna says. It's chanchal. Chanchalam himana Krishna balavad apramati balavadridam. And it's mad. It's very strong and it's very determined. So imagine if someone came in the room right now that was chanchal. Chanchal means they're running all over the place. We could just have one of the kids come in. That would do that. Chanchala mimana. Pramati means mad, like crazy. And then also very strong and determined. Be a big disturbance. So that's how the mind is. But Krishna says you can overcome that by practice and detachment.
What is the best position or way to chant it? Sometimes we do chanting as we walk or sitting down. So if you're going to concentrate and try to listen, is that a best position is by sitting down or walking?
Normally, sitting down is the best, but Prabhupada used to pace sometimes and he also went on japa walks. So you should try different things and see how you can concentrate your mind. There's a whole seminar on japa and how to do that and fix your mind. There's a lot of different techniques and things you can use, and you should employ them all and practice and see what happens. Can we have a little more chanting? Right, just before prasadam, is that okay? Is it, or is it time now?
Yeah.
Okay. You gonna play? Can you give me a G? Low G. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Ram, Ram, Hare Hare. Go Premanande! Nitai Gaura Hare. Tai Gaura Haribo, 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 Tai Gaura Haribo. Gopa Malande, Jari Nam Sankirtan Ki, Jari Nam Mantra Ki, Jari Nam Prabhu Ki, Gopa Malande. Nitai Gaura Haribo, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo. Bhaktadam, harmonium. Let's hear it for the kartal players, for the mandangas, for the Hare Krishna chanters. Let's hear it for the Hare Krishna dancers. Go Premanande! Nitai Gaura Haribo, 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 Nitai Gaura Haribo. Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Parivraj, Gacharya Shtotaras, Shishimad, Abhaicha Arunad, Avinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Parivraj, Gacharya Shtotaras, Shishimad, Srila Bhakti Siddhant Saraswati Goswami Maharaj ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavindi ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai.
Premzagaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Sri Advaita Garadhar Sri Vasarigor Bhaktivinagi Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gogopinath Shamakund Radhakund Giri Govardhan Ki Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Sri Mayapurna Vadip Dham Ki Sri Jagannath Puri Ki Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jamuna Devi Ganga Devi Ki Samabeta Bhakta Vrinda Ki All glorious to some of the devotees. All glorious to some of the devotees. All glorious to some of the devotees. Go premanande aribo. Vancha kopadrubhascha kripasandabhivacha patitanam pavanebhyo. Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.